skies are blue and clouds are white. The bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself,
you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, California. The views on this show are not necessarily the views of KUCI, UCI, or its border regions. To learn more about our programs on KUCI, log on to KUCI.org. My name is Ann. You're listening to Operation Community Stimulus. We're going to be sharing some information today with listeners from Michael. Is it Julian, Michael?
It's Michael Houlihan, just like Hot Lips and MASH.
Oh, God, that's cute. Well, Michael actually has an interesting story from his past and going forward to his present that we're going to be sharing with listeners today, so thanks for calling.
You're welcome. It's nice to be here.
Well, Michael, you are the founder of Barefoot, is that right? You had a partner that you guys founded, Barefoot Wines?
Bonnie and I started Barefoot in 1986 in our laundry room with no money and no knowledge of the wine industry.
Amazing. That is amazing. in your laundry room, huh?
Yeah, and it was like 7 by 12.
And how long did it take for you to outgrow that laundry room?
We outgrew it in about a year and a half, and then we moved into the attic, an abandoned attic of a friend of ours' winery, and worked there. And, you know, he never fixed the roof over there, so when it leaked, we had to move the buckets around.
That's what the stories, huh? That's well, I think when we share with listeners the direction you took, they're going to be quite shocked. So could you tell us what you did, how big did it get, actually, before you decided to sell it?
Well, we took Barefoot up to 600,000 cases a year, and it was sold in every state in the union, and in 28 foreign countries, and over 100 supermarkets, and all the control stores, and most of the provinces in Canada.
Hmm. That's amazing. So you really did start from a laundry room, did quite an expansion there. Well, Michael, could you share with us how you marketed? Because I understand you had a unique way that you marketed on a budget. Am I correct?
Oh, well, we didn't have a budget because we didn't have any money. But what we did is we went to our first chain store and we said, well, would you put Barefoot Wine in? And they said, not unless you spend $1 million in advertising, because nobody knows Barefoot Wine. They've never seen it. It seems ironic since it's everywhere today. Hmm. And so we said, well, we don't have any money for advertising. So we went home and we scratched our heads and we thought, how are we going to make this brand known? Hmm. And, of course, Bonnie and I are naturalists and we're conservationists and we're West Coast natives. So we spent a lot of energy trying to save what's little left of our natural beauty just as human beings before we ever got into the wine business. So we decided, well, why don't we donate some wine to those causes, and they can use it for fundraisers and auctions and whatnot, and maybe we'll get some goodwill out of it. And so we started doing that, and the next thing you know, in the neighborhoods that were surrounding where those members lived of those organizations, our brand started to sell. And so then we forged an agreement with a co-promotional relationship, really, with Surfrider Foundation in Southern California, which is now, I think, in over 170 places throughout the world, but they were small back then. And they were keen on keeping the ocean clean and cleaning up the beaches. And we thought, well, that's perfect for Barefoot, because you wouldn't want to step on a piece of glass in your bare foot. So let's work with them. And so we started to work with them. And lo and behold, our wine started to sell in the beach communities. And so then when we expanded across the country, like into Florida, for instance, there were people over there who were members of the Surfrider Association. They already knew what Barefoot was doing with Surfrider, and so they went in and bought our wines. So by working with these causes, we call it worthy cause marketing, we gave their membership a social reason to buy our product.
No, that really is, it's a great idea. I believe if you have a business, so you should be supporting the community, or the community should not support you.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what other stories? I mean, is there, you know, nonprofit organizations? I mean, what is there any other kind of nonprofit organizations that you supported that come to mind?
Well, sure. And what we did is we looked for groups that were marginalized. What I mean by marginalized is they weren't mainstream yet.
Mm.
And they had a tough time of it because they were controversial. For instance, everybody knows where Lake Tahoe is. Well, at the time, and even today, Lake Tahoe was threatened with overdevelopment, and it was going to result in algae bloom in the lake. And so there was a group up there that was founded actually in the 1930s, but in the 1990s had a big battle to try to get development to do something about their sewage treatment so that it wouldn't pollute the lake. So we took sides with them, and they were called Keep Lake Tahoe Blue. And people said, well, gee, you know, the contractors won't buy your wine, the realtors won't buy your wine, the gambling casinos won't buy it, the restaurants up there won't, and the people that have the four-cycle water scooters, they won't buy your wine because their businesses are dependent on developing in a conventional way, and these guys are trying to stop them. And the President of the United States shows up and says the Keep Lake Tahoe Blue movement is a true example of a grassroots cause that is trying to save the very economy of the Tahoe Basin, because if the lake doesn't stay blue, then the property value won't be as high.
Mm.
So that was one. And another one was a gay and lesbian movement. In the 1990s, in the early 1990s, there was a lot of ignorance about the gay community and about AIDS. So we hired a national gay sales manager, and he was out of the closet. And he stayed with us all those years, and he's still the sales manager. He did a fantastic job. We hired him because he was a great salesperson. And because he was part of the LGBT community, he wanted to support causes like fighting AIDS and what have you, and education. And so we decided to support those causes with him. And people said, gee, you know, you're going to be known as the gay wine. And we said, well, we're actually concerned that we're not, because we really want those people to buy our wine. So that's another example of a cause we supported that was not mainstream. I mean, today, of course, they're mainstream. But
how did you come across? Was this a connection you made to them, or that they made to you, this particular organization?
Well, what we would do in order to find the organizations that we wanted to support, and if you think about it, it's pretty interesting. So you're selling a product. The product is sold in supermarkets or in grocery stores or wine shops across the country. All of those outlets are surrounded by residential neighborhoods. In those residential neighborhoods are people who have causes, whether it's trying to take care of the kids after school or build a new library or clean water, what have you. So our representatives who work for us, who would be in those markets representing our brand, would go into those neighborhoods and find out what those groups were and find out how we could help them. And so that's how we bonded with so many thousands of small nonprofit organizations throughout the country.
Hmm. Yeah, that really is an amazing, amazing story. Well, how would you choose, I'm sure you, after a while, you probably got known as the wine supporter, didn't you?
Well, you know, what we did is we got known as a wine that was very much involved in community outreach. And the main thing that we were trying to do was help these communities and give their community members a social reason to buy our product. So we spend, in the United States, they spend about $150 billion a year plus on advertising. Mm. If we can just get 10% of that aimed toward nonprofits with this type of marketing, we're going to make the world a better place, and we're going to show business that there is an alternative to conventional advertising, which can be effective at customer acquisition and more effective at customer retention, because there's there's nothing like a customer that believes in what you believe in. And today we live in a society that's becoming more transparent. So what companies stand for beside the brand that they're promoting, besides the mercantile product that they're selling, is becoming more and more important because people know they're voting with their money.
Well, what would you do for a nonprofit that you work with? What would be their gain, for working with you?
Well, one of the things that we would do for the nonprofits is we would donate wine to them, to their causes, for fundraising or for consumption during their fundraising events. But another thing that we would do is we would take their cause to the marketplace. So like say in the case of Surfrider, they had a Blue Water Task Force, and they were trying to raise money for Petri dishes, which they were handing out to people that surf all over the country to actually test the water to see what kind of bacteria was growing in the water. Well, they had labs and everything. This all cost money, so they had to raise money. So what we did is we made little signs that said, hang 10 for clean water, and we put them on millions of bottles in supermarkets all over the place in cities that were adjacent to the ocean where they had these issues. And we raised funds for Surfrider by getting their word out to our marketplace in a way that they may not have been able to access otherwise.
Well, I would think that you felt like, I mean, you obviously took this company from a laundry room up to, I mean, how many years did it take for you to get to the point where you sold it? How long did you have it?
Well, it took 20 years, of course. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, we're living in the days of, you know, the four-minute manager, you know, the three-hour work week, all this stuff, two-minute abs, everything is quick, down and dirty, just give me the bottom line, just tell me the one thing. But it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. In the real world, it takes a long time to get traction. You can push against the Queen Mary for a long time and it will not move. But if you keep on applying pressure, it will begin to move and it will begin to overcome its inertia. And that's what you have to do with any new business. You have to stick to it. So for the first 10 years in our business, we were still feeling our way around. We were still trying to figure out how to make it happen. I mean, you have to remember, we were completely underfinanced. So we had to be very careful that we didn't grow too fast. We had to be very careful that we paid our bills and kept our credit up. And, you know, without financing, that requires an awful lot of juggling and bootstrapping. So the next 10 years, we became very good at it, and instead of being the recipient of all that wake-up call, we were able to go out and really make some moves in the marketplace and really expand our brand and make it an international sensation.
So once you were able to get yourself up and running well, did you continue with, did you do any advertising conventionally after that? Or
we never did any conventional advertising. And this is interesting because we discovered that, you know, once we had committed ourselves to this form of advertising, which is worthy cause marketing, that if we advertised, we would actually be discouraging the very people who are passing the word about our product by word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't tell your friend, gee, I, you know, discovered a new car the other day. It's a Chevrolet. You don't say that because you know that Chevy's got ads on TV and billboards and everything else. So the idea of passing the word, this personal thing that we do, which we call networking, which is done through all of our friends on Facebook and everybody else, people that we meet on the street, our families at dinners, and our neighbors in real time and in person, that's all done on a trust. It's based on the idea that the person couldn't know about it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And so why discourage that? So we decided to never use advertising.
Did you ever think about it, though? Was it ever a conversation, or did you just say, well, you know what, we can afford it, but we're not going to because We, you know, and I think that's a very honorable of you not to do the advertising.
Well, we decided that we were actually better off not advertising. The word of mouth was working better than advertising. See, the problem with advertising, and the advertisers will tell you this, if you're going to do it, you have to do it all the time. You don't just buy an ad in a newspaper. You have to buy an ad in the newspaper every week or every day. You don't just buy an ad in a magazine. You have to have an ad every month. And it takes months and months and months before you start to get traction from that ad. And then if you stop advertising, then your sales go down. Also, if someone else out-advertises you, then you could lose your customer to them.
Hmm.
But when your customer is your customer because they like what you stand for and they know that they're voting with their purchases, they feel good about buying your product, then why advertise?
Now, that really is amazing. Do you have any advice that you could share for startup companies today?
Oh, I've got tons. In fact, we wrote a book. It's called The Barefoot Spirit, and it was written specifically for people who are thinking about starting their business. But my advice off the cuff for people starting their business is to start small and make your mistakes in a small area. Don't try to expand too fast. And remember that distribution is probably more important than your idea or your great price or your great quality. Because if it isn't there, they can't buy it. And today we talk about, oh, you don't need distribution anymore because we have the internet. Who's kidding who? Everybody goes to the store every week. There's stuff you can't buy over the internet for a very good reason. It costs too much to deliver to you.
Mm-hmm.
So items that are like under $20, you're going to go buy in a store. The items that maybe are over $20, you may buy online, but many of those you're going to go buy in a store just because it's more efficient. So you really are looking at going through a distribution system if you are a product producer. So that means that you have to learn how that works, and it's different in every field. So my advice is take it slow, keep it small, learn as you go.
Did you know anything about distribution when you started this winery?
Not a clue. Not a clue.
Wow.
And I can tell you that a lot of people think they're in the business of whatever they do. I don't care if they're making doilies or making wine or they've got a new widget. Whatever they think they're doing, they think that's their business. But really what you're doing is you're doing distribution and personnel management. Those are the two things, and cash flow management, those three things. Distribution, personnel management, and cash flow management. And if you don't know how to do those three things, it doesn't matter what you're selling.
And I would think that principle would hold true of even a nonprofit organization.
It does, and nonprofits need that help very much. And as a matter of fact, Bonnie and I donate our management time, because we are management consultants, to various different nonprofits, and we try to help them with their brand building and their financial sustainability.
Hmm. What about some information about your book? I mean, what kind of highlights could you share with listeners?
Well, you know, Bonnie and I have read hundreds of business books, and they usually are very prescriptive texts. They have lists. Here's the five things you got to do. Here's the three things you should never do. Watch out for these 10 things. Here's the 8 things that you need to do to be a success. And by chapter 2, you're all listed out. So many people buy business books, they read a couple chapters, and they put them down. So when we wrote The Barefoot Spirit, we knew that. And we said, we have to write a book that people are going to finish. So we decided to write what we call a business adventure story. So instead of getting lists of things to do and not do, you read a story about these people who are starting this business in their laundry room. You know it becomes an international blockbuster, but they are up against some insurmountable challenges and seemingly immovable objects, and so they get around them, and so you're with them. You are on the adventure with them. As an observer, you see these people go against these problems and try this and try that and everything else, and they finally find a way through. And this stuff is not taught in school. So you wind up gleaning from reading the story the business lessons. As Bonnie says, laugh while you learn. It's also cry while you learn. Because a lot of this stuff is, you start to see these challenges and you go, oh my goodness. One thing I can also tell you about the book is everybody loves wine, and wine is very popular, and there's hundreds of books written about wine. And they're usually about how wine's made, what it tastes like, the varietals, where it comes from. This book, and when what it goes with, this book is about how wine gets to you. And it could be about how anything gets to you. And so that's the real eye-opener here, is you get a behind-the-scenes view of the real wine business like you've never seen. And you'll never go into a store after reading this book and look at a bottle of wine the same way.
Wow. What made you and Bonnie decide to write a book like this? What was your motivation?
Well, you know, we have a lot of friends who are boomers, and they have boomerangers. And the boomeranger, of course, that's the kid that you spent your last dollar sending to college. He went through college. He got his degree. He graduates. And guess what? He moves home because half of the college kids can't find a job today because what they were trained to do doesn't exist anymore. The middle management jobs are pretty much gone. And so these guys and gals are out there thinking, maybe self-employment is my only chance for employment. So what did they need to know to be armed to go out there and do battle with bootstrapping? You know, are your kids ready to bootstrap? Are you ready to bootstrap? So here is an adventure story about some people who bootstrapped, and you will learn some ideas and you will pick up on some principles that you can use to make your business successful. And the bottom line why we wrote the book is we don't want everybody to take 20 years to be a success. We'd like to see them be a success in 4 or 5 years. So we're giving them the lessons we learned the hard way, hoping that they will pick up on it and apply it to their real-world situation. That's in our book, The Barefoot Spirit. And it's called The Spirit, The Barefoot Spirit, because it's the spirit behind the brand, and it is the guiding principles that you have to maintain between your ears in order to be successful in business. When you make a decision, what are the guiding principles that you rely on, that you refer to, that guide you? That's what this book is about.
Well, currently, what are you guys doing now?
Well, now we work as business consultants, and we are public speakers. We speak at conventions. We speak at entrepreneurial schools, and we also write a couple of blogs. We have one blog that we write at the Barefoot Wine Founder. It's called barefootwinefounders.com. We have a weekly business blog there we write. And then we also write another blog that is in a site called thebrandauthority.net. And it's thebrandauthority.net. And there's 600 words a week in both sites, and they have to do with business and brand building, and they're broken down for the average person, so they're easy to understand. This is street language. This is not college boy talk. So I think that everybody's going to learn something from this. And the other thing we're doing is we're donating a lot of our time to nonprofits and helping them.
What is the name of this book that you have? You mentioned it, but
it's called The Barefoot Spirit.
The Spirit, that's what I thought, yeah.
It's called The Barefoot Spirit, yeah.
Well, how could somebody, say, get information about how they could purchase one or contact information or whatever?
Well, what we have right now is, it hasn't been published yet, but we're leaking our own book, and your listeners can go and get it in a download form. So if they go to our website, if they go to thebarefootspirit.com, they'll see a button there that says book tasting. It's like wine tasting. So they can push that button, and when they do, they'll read a few chapters from the book. If they decide that it's fun and they want to buy it and read it, and they think that it's going to help them, or, you know, maybe their youngster who came home from college, then they can go ahead and make the purchase. And what they buy is they buy the download, which can be read on a Nook, it can be read on a, on any computer, you know, iPad, etc. And then for the for $15.95, and then we'll send them the printed book when it comes out and ship it to them for free.
Oh, wow, wow.
So they get a two-for-one and free shipping offer right now, and we're offering that to your listeners right now. They can go to the site. That's thebarefootspirit.com.
Well, it sounds like you guys have really got an exciting project going on, and a lot more exciting projects going on.
Well, thank you. We certainly, we're busy. Let's put it that way.
Well, now, how long has it been since you've been out of the wine business?
Well, you know, I pretty much never got out of it because when we sold the business in 05, then we got hired by our acquirers to show them how to keep the entrepreneurial spirit alive in a large corporation and also to demonstrate worthy cause marketing, which I am told they continue to use. And also, the other thing that we do is, since we were in the wine industry, many people who are trying to start their own brand and whatnot have contracted with us for advice. And there are many young people who want to get into business who have hired us to help them with guiding principles. So we've been very busy as consultants and teachers and speakers for the past 5 years.
Sounds like that 20 years is going to pay off for many more years, though.
Well, you know, we paid our dues, that's for sure. We learned things the hard way, but what we know, we're very sure of.
That's awesome. Well, Michael, I really want to thank you so much for sharing that information. I'm very familiar with Barefoot Wines. It's a, you know, and it's just nice to know the history behind how it came about, you know?
Well, thank you very much, Anne, and it's a pleasure to be on your show,
it's a pleasure,
I wish you luck, and I like what you're doing. I'm sure you're helping an awful lot of people out there.
I like to do as much good as I can, too, because I feel like you either should be a person in need of help or helping.
I hear that.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, and you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, California. The views on the show are not necessarily the views of KUCI, UCI, or its border regions. To learn more about our programs, log on to KUCI, and you can always reach me through my website, which is OperationCommunityStimulus.com. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Ann.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you.